back. I feel like this is the second time we've said we're back, but we're back for real this time, recording season two of Woke at Work. Blanca and I are aware that you all have been waiting. Blanca was like, when I run into people or when I'm talking to folks, they're like, what'd you say? They were like, what can
Oh,
I
there was a, oh yeah, I was running a workshop and I said, so does anyone have any questions? Just like, you know, as we close out the workshop and it's like, when are y'all recording season two? So I'm like, well, I thought it was about the workshop, but it's coming, soon come,
Right,
soon come. It's
right. Yes, I
coming.
know. Folks in at Hands In are like, okay, so we're waiting. I'm like, okay, I know. But you know, we had to get our lives together. And so, well, okay, I your life was probably together. I had to get my life together. Okay.
Isn't that what this episode is about? How lives are not together.
Well, that is kind of what we're talking about today. It's just basically Blanca and I reflecting over this last year. It has been a year since we first recorded Woke at Work. So you all will be hearing this a couple months later after we record. There's some lag time, but for Blanca and I right now, it's a few weeks past the 1 year anniversary of our first recording. And I think we've told the story before of, you know, just basically how we met. I kept hearing Blanca's name in Brooklyn, people talking about, hey, you should meet Blanca, or do you know Blanca? She does this, she does that, especially when I was working as the equity director at the organization where I was. And then Reed 718, you had done some things with them.
Yeah.
And so everybody, I just kept hearing your name, like Blanca Ruiz. You need to meet Dr. Blanca Ruiz. And so I finally was like, okay, put me in touch, reached out, and you came alongside me and helped me do some work at the organization. And then I was just like, man, I love talking to this girl. Like, we have the best conversation.
Dip into many conversations, and I guess we could have recorded all those too, huh?
Right, exactly. We could, girl, look, we could have recorded some of them, not all of
Them, they private.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know what? I have this idea for this podcast, basically talking about the things you and I were always talking about anyway. And I was so glad that you were down to record. And so about a year ago, we sat down in our studio. When in our offices in Brooklyn, the North Star offices, and you brought your kids along. It was like a random Sunday.
Sunday, I remember it was cold. Yes, I do remember it. I mean, we remember it because of what happened when we wrapped. I think it was literally
Right.
the minute we wrapped, Sean looked at us and was like, Kobe, it was just announced that Kobe just died. And we were like, no, that's not true. Like, we were
Right.
not, like we had just wrapped. And so,
Yeah, like I thought it was one of those like weird internet rumors, you know, like how people always killing folks. Girl, that reminds me, aside, Sean's mom, she used to be really bad about that, like believing that somebody had died. And one time she texted us and she was like, "Don't tell Ezekiel, but Hulk Hogan just died." And we were like, "Oh no." You know, 'cause our
Google. As I'm like, Google it.
Right. Yeah, because our son was little and he was into wrestling. Turned out, of course, Hulk Hogan had not died. And so when Sean said that, I thought it was one of those things. But unfortunately, it turned out to be true. And I remember we were all just sitting in the office like, what? Like, what
And
in the
we hadn't
world?
even known like the details. We just knew him. We hadn't known about the other passengers. We didn't know anything. I didn't, you know, we didn't. I remember driving away with the kids in the back seat and sitting at the red light about to turn a corner. And then they're like, well, it was just reported that he was not alone and that he was on his way to a basketball game with his daughter. And I was like, wait, what? And I'm just like, wait. Like these are lives. They're multiple lives. And so, yeah.
That was crazy. And so that will be, you know, that's certainly a way that we will always remember, you know, the anniversary of our first recording, and also that Sean had to be in the studio with us because we didn't know how to do anything. And
Sure did.
he was working the equipment. I don't know that we're much better now. I mean, still, this stuff is complicated. So
yeah, we just show up. Someone was like, yeah, I got to pick your brain about a podcast. I was like, I show up and I talk. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's like calling me up on a call on a phone. And that's how we, that's the podcast, no?
Right. That's how it works. Right? We might not be much better now, but at least Sean isn't in there sitting in that little bitty studio with us pushing buttons and basically tweeting while we're talking. And then, of course, another big, what'd you say?
I said it's a whole year. And in that year for us, I believe individually, it's felt like five, but I know for many people, it's felt like five because, right, as you were about to say.
Yes, like we had no idea that this pandemic was, what, just like a month or so away. Like, I think we recorded maybe three episodes. We got to record three episodes live together in the studio. That first one, and then we interviewed Nadina and then Melanie. And I think that was it, right? And then it was like, oh my gosh, the pandemic hit. And like life as we knew it, you know, really completely changed. And so we really wanted to take this episode, this first episode of season two, a year later, to really reflect on what has changed for us, for you and for me. But also, I think a lot of what has changed for us is really representative of what has changed for working women, working moms. Period, you know, this entire year. I think that our experiences really reflect in a number of ways the experience of women during this pandemic. And so just want to take some time to take stock of that. Like, I was sitting with my family at the dinner table the other day, and we were just,
you know, that's so nice. You sitting at a table with a family eating together.
That what? Is one
dinner time already. Why are we eating again?
That I can say that is one of the things my family does pretty consistently is sit at the table together and eat dinner. And it's just been a tradition of ours for forever. But we were talking, and like we were talking about you know, quarantine. We call it quarantine. I mean, I guess people were still quarantining, but nothing like quarantine of February, March, April of last year, where like you literally did not go anywhere except to get groceries.
Yeah. Nothing opened. You couldn't go to rent. You couldn't order food. You had to
And I think I've said it before, but my family quarantined. We quarantined in Vermont because I was literally losing my mind in Brooklyn. You would have had to have been there, I feel like, but the experience was wild. Like, this is the beginning of the pandemic. We didn't know a whole lot about it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Except like, if you got it, like you were down, you were going to die, you know, like that's what it seemed like, you know?
Right. It was during that time there were sirens, right? I mean, one of the recordings that we had, they were like sirens that were endless. Like, you just kept hearing ambulances and ambulances. And we talked about it, I think, in the episode with Sweet Joy, but like, you know, that, you know, I think we forget that was like that we were in that place a year ago.
Yes. And that's what it was like. We definitely, you know, forgot, like I had forgotten just the tension of that moment in time, the sirens constantly, because New York was like the epicenter of the pandemic at that time, and they were just nonstop, and I was losing it. And so we were like, I was like, I can't do this. Let's leave. Let's go. Sean found us a place to go in like the woods of Vermont, like the straight up woods.
To me, that's scarier. I'm like, you can't put me in the woods.
Girl, no, for me, like I am from the country. I'm from Kentucky. I like the woods. I mean, I don't want to act like I grew up on a farm. I didn't. I grew up, you know, in the city, but it was still Kentucky. And so I like the outdoors. And so I felt safe. I felt secluded. I felt like, okay, we're going to be okay. But what was also crazy about that moment was just, I was thinking about food during that time and how like, I remember, girl, you had stockpiled early. Like, you had...
We have a getaway bag. My husband's like, listen, in case the zombies really do come, we have a... We got bag. We are ready. Listen, if y'all want to know what to put in that bag, we can tell you. But...
Yeah. Yes. You were, I remember we were recording and you were, like, showing us, like, your... Like, you stockpiled, I think, before most people, knew to do it. Yeah. And like food, it was scary. I remember like we didn't waste anything. I was like washing Ziploc bags. We were eating leftovers for lunch until they were completely gone because it was one of the, it was like we were in survival mode, right? It was like the grocery store shelves were emptying out. I couldn't always find bread. There were certain foods I could never find frozen broccoli. Going to the grocery store took hours because we were wiping everything down. Sean was buying. You said what now?
We're waiting on lines for like an hour to get into stores. I mean, still.
That's right. And like when you found food, like just Sean would go to the grocery store, girl, and he would come home with the most random things because it was just food. And you didn't know when it was going to get to the point where you had to eat randomness, girl. So I think the most random thing he bought was a can of sauerkraut. And we don't eat sauerkraut.
Throw that bad boy on something else. You could have you some, what is it? What's that sandwich? Why am I drawing a blank on the sandwich?
What is it, like a Reuben or something?
Reuben, listen, you could Reubenify everything. I don't know. You could,
girl,
you could...
I know. He brought home a can of pigeon peas, which shout out to the Caribbean folks, you know, but I don't know how to cook pigeon peas. And he was just like, but it was like that mold, like when you found food, you bought it and you brought it home because you just didn't know. And like, the stress of that time and that moment now a year later where it's like we can go to the grocery stores. We can even go to restaurants if we want to. You know, our food supply seems to be stable again. People aren't fighting over toilet paper anymore. And so it's easy to forget what it was like a year ago when you weren't so sure that we were always going to have food, you know, like. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and it does make me also highlight our privilege, right, to be in that place now, because there are still families that I will say, not in that same state, but, you know, who are without jobs based on
right
the way, you know, stuff went down, lost jobs, had to leave jobs because it became a situation where they had to care for someone, had emotional, you know, impact of either the weight of it all or family members dying or just every, you know, so, you know, yeah. There's a sense of like we were stockpiling and doing our stuff, but also that there are families that are continuing to be without. And so I don't, you know,
especially now as it in places like Texas, you know, where the government there has completely failed its people and have the nerve to actually be blaming its people in certain circumstances for not being tough enough, which blows my effing mind. I don't know if you saw that mayor, some mayor in Texas talking about, I'm about to hurt some people's feelings real quick. And then he ended up being the one with his feelings hurt because he ended up having to resign from his mayoral position. But I couldn't believe the things that were coming out of his mouth about people not being tough enough and whatever. I'm like, wait a minute. We pay taxes, bro, to make sure that folks like you are making the decisions that it's such that when snow happens, ice happens, you know, that we have the proper things in place. It's not about being tough enough and asking for an effing handout. We pay taxes for your salary. Anyways, girl, don't get me.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I mean, I think the thing that I will say is that when, you know, I forget, I'm gonna butcher Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s quote, but you know, the test of a person, he says a man, but a person during a time of discomfort. And so, you know, how do these times? This is more than discomfort. Like this is, you know, for some, you know, some folks are trying to survive.
Yeah.
But like the amount of creativity that has been birthed through this time, the amount of resilience that has been fostered. I think about the children who have been forced to learn schooling in a different environment and just take it, right? Like they don't, they may show it in other ways. And if you have your children at home, right? Like the amount of children who start back up in school and then are told to shut down and then go back and forth, back and forth. So the amount of resilience, the amount of creativity, I watch all of these restaurants try to figure out creative ways to do outdoor dining. I'm in New York where it's cold and I'm like, y'all literally created a bubble for people to sit in and eat, right? Like, this is creative. And you know, I do think when those things, to know that there are general tragedies that happen and then layer them on top of a pandemic, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think about the time, you know, we talked about this probably in previous episodes, but just that window of time also, you know, as we got into May and June was, you know, a social upheaval and unrest as Black Lives Matter protests were happening across the country and the impact that that's going to have, right? The long-term impact and obviously the direct impact in it daily, but on little people who are observing this and watching it and that this is going to be in their schema, right? Like when I teach kids, we're like, oh, the civil rights movement were like hundreds of years ago. We're like, nah, not quite, right?
not exactly.
For them, is this their version of seeing a form of protesting? And so I don't, you know.
I mean, it's like our grandparents who grew up in a depression. You know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't go out to a restaurant with my grandmother and waste a bite of food.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because it was part of her, you know, she was a child during the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And when food was scarce and so our kids, to your point, are going to grow up with this as their frame of reference, right? Like, you know, they're going to say to their kids, don't you dare complain about such and such. You don't know what it's like to, you know, A, B, or C. And like, you know, you bring up a good point about our privilege and the fact that I think part of what was so scary about last year is, you know, I grew up poor and mm-hmm. I can remember there being a time, I can remember very keenly, like, first of all, we didn't have snacks in my house. My mom was a single mom. She worked really, really hard. And she was one of those people that made just enough to never qualify for government assistance. Uh-huh. So we didn't get food stamps. You know, she didn't get a check on the first of the month. We needed it and could have used it. But because she worked full time and was like literally just probably a tick above the poverty line, what mm-hmm. they said was the poverty line, you know, she never qualified for assistance. And so I can we didn't have snacks in my house. And I remember when I started dating Sean and we were teenagers and I would go to his house and he had snacks. Like his mom was so good about keeping snacks in the house. And I was like, wait, you could just have these things? Like for me, it was like,
open up your backpack and we're like,
right. I was like, I thought snacks was something you went to the corner store and got every, you know, like when you had a little change, you had a little extra money, you have 50 cents or whatever, you go get a Debbie snack. But like you could just have them all on your counter. Like that's how I grew up. And so I think that, and I can remember distinctly a time where we didn't have food. Like my mom didn't know what we were going to have for dinner one night. That didn't happen often, but I can remember one time as a child, it was, you know, it was real. And our neighbor just happened to bring over some greens that she was growing in her backyard and was like, hey, I've got some extra greens. And we had like greens and my mom threw together some cornbread. And we still joke about it to this day. She's like, you know, y'all were like, oh, my God, this is the best meal I ever had. You know, because we didn't know. It was only when I grew up later on and realized like, oh, that was like, let me throw something together. So I think part of what was so scary about last year was having the money to buy food and there just not being the food to buy.
Yeah.
You know, like that's part of what was so scary. I wanted ground beef and you go and there was no ground beef. There was no chicken at the grocery store. There was no bread. That was, I know how to do, I don't have enough money. Like I lived that life. But
it sounds like you needed to be, I don't have enough meat. So therefore, I'm just saying, right? Like,
right.
I'm kidding. I didn't have to worry about ground beef because
I know, girl. I know. There were probably all the vegan options left.
It was. I was like, when they started to like do some sales, I was like, no. Don't bring people over to my department over here. Not take my stuff. No. I think it is. It is a real challenge to think about the fact that there wasn't much, right? And I also think about, you know, those of us who have moved social class, you know, how the moment, you know, there's some broke stuff that we start to do. Some like, you know, my husband would be like, are we really saving aluminum foil? Like, are we really reusing it? Like in general. And so, when we sort of start to remember those days where we did have, you know, did not have a choice to live differently.
Yeah.
It does create this like sort of dissonance in ourselves, and it's just like wait, I thought, you know, and which right. is our whole internal, you know, piece. It was funny because my mother was definitely, she's always stockpiled. She's like, oh, when you're a senior citizen, everybody thinks about you, so everybody keeps bringing me dishes and everybody keeps bringing me food. So my mother was like chilling. She's like, I never had people try to bring me more meals than now. And I was like, you cannot open the door, tell them to hang it on the door. They can't come in. Can't, like, you know. So.
Your mom was like, oh, I'm good, girl. Yeah.
Do you want some? Do you want some of this? And I'm like, no, we good. We good.
I mean, and looking back on it, like, we really were fine. I might not have been able to find all the things that I was used to having, but it was just that sense of panic, right? Like that sense of, well, what if I'm fine today, but what if we're not fine tomorrow, you know? Right. And I've got all these kids. Girl, like, it was some crazy stuff. Like, I remember when we were packing to go to Vermont, I was like, okay, what am I going to take? I was like, okay, let me take my pearls, because I always wear pearls. I was like, no, I'm not going to take my pearls. And then, girl, I'm so embarrassed to admit this, but I literally was like, okay, no, let me take my pearls, because there may come a point in time where I have to barter them for food. Girl!
I should not be. You put it out there, so I'm just going to laugh.
I mean, what? Like, I was on some real Walking Dead-ish, okay? I was just like, no, I'm going to bring my valuables, and, you know, because if things get really crazy, girl, are you crying laughing at me?
I want some pearls. I got us. Because you know you want to survive for some pearls.
No, right?
Go to the oceans and make friends with the clams, and you know,
I'm embarrassed. Okay, I'm embarrassed to admit that, but like, that's where my mind was.
But I will say, you know, one of the things we did talk about just prior to this was just, you know, it has been a year, and it has also been a year where we've seen. I was watching the news, and one of the things that's really heavy on my mind, it's almost a year that we've been in this. And I joked with my family, I'm like, y'all, we've been together for a whole year, like next to each other, like in the same space with each other. My son goes, well, you go to Trader Joe's, and when you go to Trader Joe's, you have a break from us. I'm like, that's a whole 2 hours. Like, I've been in like in each other's space, and so I was watching, I don't know, something on the news, and they were talking about how many women, you know, just have left their jobs, and they, you know, more recently, it said up to about nearly 3 million American women have left the labor force over the past year. And so that, I mean, I know we talk about, you know, women of color at work, and just, well, you know, just stepping back and just thinking of something that's universally affecting women. That's just the weight that is carried, right? And trying to figure out survival strategies, right? Elaborate pearl plans, right? But also, like, what, you know, those who have children are helping children with remote learning. Those who are essential workers trying to figure out if I'm, you know, my life worth it, right? Like, is my life worth this during these times when, you know, all of a sudden you were given the role of essential, you know, worker. And so, yeah, so I, you know, the people who are, you know, home, single, and then having to figure out, you know, how to engage and interact with people, and waited like 7 months to do that. And so.
Right. Like, I saw an article about loneliness during this time, and I was just like, you know what? I mean, there are a number of ways to be lonely. You can be surrounded by people and still be lonely, obviously, but, you know, I cannot imagine what it is like to actually be alone, you know, during this time.
Me either, because I haven't been. Sorry.
Right. Of course. Of course not. No, me neither. But let's talk about that. You know, you brought up something really important. This statistic about 3 million women having left the workforce over the course of this last year. You know, in large part because of the demands that have been put on us. And this is something else that we talked about with Sweet Joy last year. You know, I mean, I'm a working woman. You're a working woman. You know, the women we talk to, I mean, that's this podcast, Woke at Work. And right. And what does it mean? You know, I was telling you earlier, to be at work and your kids are always woke, like awake. In woke, right? Like, not power to the people woke, but your kids are literally always awake, needing mm-hmm. something. You know, what are we having for lunch? What's for dinner? Can we go somewhere? I can't sign in. It won't let me log in. You know, I'm bored. It's just, it is constant. And for me, part of the reason we're just now recording this second season is because of the demands, that the strain, I should say, that this pandemic has placed on me personally and my family personally. Like, I got to a point last year where so many women were having to make the decision to leave their jobs. I didn't really have that as an option, much like you. We're both entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. You know, we get paid when we work, basically. You even more so than me, you know. Yeah. You as someone who leads workshops or whatever. And so, you know, just didn't really have the luxury to not work. I shouldn't say luxury, because for some people, maybe it's a luxury. For some people, it was like a literal necessity. Yeah. But I had to keep working last year. And then I decided, oh, now's a good time for me to start a doctoral program. Oh, and also one more thing, I'm going to start a nonprofit, right? So I literally did the opposite. And get a puppy. Okay, how about that? So I literally did the opposite of what so many people did last year. Instead of pulling back, like, I ramped up and up and up and up. And it finally got to a point where I was just like, I just hit a wall. Last year, I was just like, at the end of the year, I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. Like, something is going to have to give. And so I did. I stepped back and I went on sabbatical from the North Star. You and I had started to record season 2. And I asked if we could just like put that on hold for the rest of the year. And I just needed some time to kind of decompress, you know, and take some things off of my plate. I didn't take enough off my plate. There are some things that it is what it is. But yeah, what could be let go of, I did. And I just started having to say no to a lot more things, because I had spent the year really ramping up, trying to keep people employed at the North Star, which meant starting new initiatives and doing new things, trying to help families, and including my own family, respond to the fact that all their extracurricular activities have really been put on hold. And so I accidentally started this nonprofit I didn't mean to start. I just wanted to
accidentally all in. Started a
whole new thing, you know, and yeah, I really did. I hit a wall and was just like, I can't function. And COVID, like, my family got COVID last year.
Right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Right. That's how crazy of a year it was that you could forget about having COVID.
Yeah. But I mean, like, the whole thing too about taking some time and stepping back. I have a friend who extended her maternity leave because she just was like, she works in a hospital. So she was also like, I'm just going to pause on all of this. and, you know, has to go back now and now has to figure out how to parent two children, one infant, one, you know, elementary age child while working, while her and her husband are both working complete opposite hours. She has an overnight shift. He has a day shift. And so it's just, it's a lot. It is a lot. And so it makes me, you know, when you talk about the idea, you know, for the first 2 months when everything was shut down, I actually had no money coming in because my work was primarily working with schools. And the last thing with schools, trying to figure out about racial justice, they're like, we don't even know what schooling online is going to look like, what virtual learning, what is this? And so for 2 months, I didn't get a paycheck. And so it was like, you know, panic starts to hit in. And it's not like, you know, I've always been, my mother trained me to have some money under the bed, not literally. So like, don't come trying to ransack my house looking for some money under the bed, like that man. But you know, you have something for a rainy day. You need to run away to Puerto Rico for an emergency. When we were kids, we were able to figure it out. Right. And so, but for 2 months I didn't. And so the scarcity piece became really real for me. Mm. And so what ended up happening and still is, and I'm never going to pretend to embody perfection, but overworking because I experienced 2 months of that fear of not having anything coming in was also one of my like defaults during the pandemic. And I often say that, you know, sometimes we default to things when crisis starts to happen, right? When something happens in our lives, what do we default to? And so, you know, for me, my default was to do exactly what I knew how to do, which was overwork, right? And so, in any pre-pandemic, in any given week, I could possibly do two workshops because it involved some traveling. And that was a stretch. Like, I have kids, so I can't go traveling to two different cities in 1 week. And like, it just was a lot. Whereas now I run 5 to 6 workshops in a week, and I'm like, I prepare for those diligently. Yeah. There's an emotional load. They're all racial justice pieces. Right. And so I haven't accounted for that. And so that has been like my reality. And I've seen so many of us, I'm getting emails at, you know, 9 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. Those of us trying to pretend and delay delivery till the next morning so that no one knows you're working at night. And if you are laughing and nodding your head because you're one of those, I feel you. I'm that person too. And so, you know, it does, when I think about the overworking, and yeah, and by the way, I'm hungry. By the way, give me, you know, like there's lunch, there's breakfast. I'm like, y'all, do y'all eat all day in school? I'm sure you don't, because every time I sent you to school with lunch, you'd bring it back.
I know, girl.
Like, you weren't eating. And then they were like, well, we don't want to go back because we don't get home freshly made pancakes in the morning. I was like, well, maybe I'm spoiling y'all too much and you're not going to get none no more. Get a bowl of soup, right? Like, and so I was joking with a friend yesterday because they'll, you know, my kids are on break, you know, right now, but they'll get all, you know, they'll have like device time. And then when they're not on device, they're like, I'm bored. And I'm like, you know what? We have nothing. Bro, we didn't have a TV. We had a TV, but like it was only the channels. And we all know we used to watch it on Saturdays. And then after 4 o'clock was when cartoons were on. And so I was like, figure out, you have all of these toys. You had a Christmas, like,
pets. Play with all the pets. I got you.
That y'all wanted. We got this pandemic puppy. Go play. Like, figure it out, y'all. But I think
you bring up a really good point, Blanca. I hadn't even considered this idea of overworking as a trauma response, right? Like, that's probably exactly what I was doing last year.
Like, you know, people, when they have grief, go back to, I mean, I was one of those, right? My father passed away a few years ago, and I led a workshop the next day. I watched him take his last breath, and I led a workshop. Mm. Everyone was looking at me, and I was like, I'm fine, because this is how I know how to cope. Right. When I was younger, right, when things were happening at home, I would go to school and stay focused. Right. When I was in college, things were going on in my personal world, I would focus. Right. And so, you know, like that's a whole, you know, a lot of unlearning and relearning. Right. My husband used to text me while we're sitting in the same house, and it say SYAD. It was like, sit your ass down. Right. And so I'm like, well, something needs to get done. Right. When I think about the year, I do think about, you know, there have been a lot, there's been a lot more revealed to me about how the work that I thought I did on myself was, you know, recurring. And it's okay, right? Like, it's okay. We're not perfect people. But then what do we do with that? And then, you know, there is a moment where a part of me is saying, I will never have this time with my kids in this way again. Right.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, like a lesson, this happens again. And yet it's hard. It's hard. You know,
it's hard, girl. Like I try to,
and sometimes I'm like, get out of my face. And I feel bad. I'm like that awful mother who's not doing arts and crafts. Cause you see people putting on, you know, on social media, I'm like, look at the arts and craft activity we did today. And I'm like, okay, no, I'm not doing that today. Cause you know, I'm tired. Right. And so.
I know, girl, I feel the same way. Like when I have a girlfriend, and I want to have her on the show. Actually, we need to have her on the show, but I have a girlfriend and cause she was literally on the news for creating like a summer camp. An at-home summer camp for her kids where they had matching t-shirts. And I was like, damn. Like, I was looking at it. Like, each of her kids.
The first month is something. But after a year of it, you're like, wait a minute.
Right? Like, each of her kids, like, planned a week. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I was like, okay, kids, each of y'all plan a week of summer camp. And we went out, bought all this stuff for their week of summer camp. I think we got through, like, half a week of somebody's camp before that just really went out the window. Never got the t-shirts made. But I'm like looking. I'm like, wow, like, that's amazing. Why can't I get my life together in that way?
Social media, too, right, is that oftentimes we are living life comparing ourselves to other people's like posted lives, right? So like when you post, I often look at like all the pictures people have of their homes that are like clean. I was like, yeah, show me what it looks like when the kids wake up. Show me what it looks like at 11 o'clock, right? Like, you know, then there's that reality. But you had didn't we have somebody who wrote in with a question like this?
Yes, or? We did. That's very much along these lines. And before we get to that, I was going to say, like, I'm wondering what you think about how we recover from this time as women, as working women. I've been trying to envision what life is going to look like maybe in the fall or next year. And I'm like, how do we transition back? Will we ever really, I mean, at the point at which 3 million women have left the workforce, are they going to have jobs to come back to? And then where are they going to be starting? If they left in middle management, or if they left as executives, do they get to come back to those roles? Or are they all of a sudden going to, you know, have to start back from the beginning and work our way up? I've seen so many think pieces about the gains that we have, you know, earned as women being lost during this time. And how long will it take us to recover? You know, I'm thinking, am I just going to go right back into the workforce? Like, am I going to go right back into like a 9-to-5 and picking my kids up and taking them to dance and chess and gymnastics and all? Like, do we just pick back up? Or are there some, so one, are we ever going to regain the ground that we've lost as working women? But two, do we really want to go back to that same pace? Or are there some lessons from this last year that we should be taking with us?
I mean, I think of this as like two spaces. One is like an individual piece and one is a larger systemic piece, right? What was lifted was that I think, and I haven't done research on this, but in conversations and in listening and watching the news, the systemic piece is that women still continue to carry a lot of a load, of emotional load of things, right? And I think I do want to stop for a second to say, if people are staying home to start working, I mean, whatever, with their flexible work schedules, what was starting to happen, and then if women were leaving their jobs, childcare providers were also losing their job, who are mostly women, right? People were like, well, I'm home. I need to save money. I may not have a job. So maybe the people who are helping to support you, I call them the home supporters, right? The people who are helping you with your children, who are cleaning homes, like all these things, mostly women, right? We're running these. So they've also lost their jobs, right?
Yeah.
So like, all your support team are women and they've lost their jobs. And so what happens when systemically the cultures that in a gendered world that we are carrying alone, right? That we're carrying the load of the children, that we're carrying the load of taking care of families, whether it's our parents or somebody, you know, like the whole, the familial caregiver. And so that's what I, you know, has also lifted, which is a systemic piece. So then we're organizations and companies, and where people work flexible, right? Were they, you know, did they, you had to give up something to get something? Do you have, so I think that there's a space if you run a company, if you are in those companies, for people to reevaluate the same way they do with maternity leave, or are still doing, because some, we're not even going to talk about maternity leave in this country. but like, are places reevaluating that, right? And like how they're functioning? Are we reevaluating what it's like to have empathy, like the basic act of empathy? People are home trying to work with, sometimes in my case, a child is behind the screen asking you for something. So right. When I have to go off screen for a second, I'm listening while I can't, and I can't type because I'm making a sandwich, because, you know, like all those things. And so, so obviously we're talking about people who are home working with children, right? So, I mean, there's an extent to some people don't have children and are going through some of this. And so, yeah, so I think that there's that. And I don't know if I would go back. I don't know what going back. I don't miss running around to go do. I don't miss the running around. I genuinely don't miss it. So I'm not the right person. I'm like, can we continue to social distance after this is all said and done? Can you continue to give me 6 feet? Can you continue? I'm one of those. And so.
But maybe, you know, to your point, maybe women will come out of this, you know, to your point about empathy, with an ability to ask, one, know more clearly what we need, and to ask for those things and to make them a requirement for, in exchange for our work, you know, like, oh yeah, I will come and, you know, do this thing. I will serve as the executive director of this organization, but I'm also going to need, you know, Fridays to work from home, or I'm going to need to leave the office by 3 o'clock every day, and whatever, whatever. Like, are we now going to go into the workforce with an understanding, a more keen understanding of what we need in order to not fall into those patterns that we were falling into, that place that we were in pre-pandemic? Like, I'm going to need a lot more flexibility. You know, and like you, I don't want to go back to that rat race, that let's wake up at 6:30 in the morning, everybody out the house by 7:30. I'm going to go to work and somehow find time to pick up the prescriptions and the dry cleaning, take the shoes back, mail the package. You know, like, I want to find a way for those things to be naturally built into my day, if at all possible. I don't know. I'm just, as we approach, as people are getting vaccinated and we're getting closer and closer to the time where things are going to go back to normal, if you will, I am wondering if working women in this country, whether you're a mother or not, if our new normal will include some of the lessons that we've learned about who we are and what we need, and, you know, in exchange for the load that we carry. I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah. And I will say, I've also spoken to people who have figured out during this time to find new things they love to do. They never had time to do. And so some people have started, company like gifts, you know, how to do that. Some people I know have like picked up their crocheting and knitting. Some people have just started like other things that have, you know, that have been on the side. And now that they're home, they're like, the actual traveling piece is removed, and like have created a schedule, whether they're teachers, principals, or any of those things, or whether they work somewhere. And this is obviously for people who work from home. And I just wonder if, you know, like, there are people who are like, no, I have something else that also fills my soul. That,
yeah.
And so how do I make sure that that isn't lost when I'm going back, right? How do I make space for both? There's some people I know who are like legit started working out like crazy. And I'm like have created a new fitness plan and have built it into their life. So now how do you do that going, quote unquote, back to normal, whatever that
means? Right.
isn't, could this be your new normal? And so I just say, I offer that to say that as we go back to whatever, right, whatever the fall might look like, whatever next year, I think 2022, but whatever that looks like, is how do you preserve the things that kept you together and kept you whole? And how do we continue? When I think of disruptions, right, how do you, what can keep you whole and what can we discard, right? And so if this is all a form of a disruption in our daily lives, then how are we going to live differently based on that, right? How are we going to talk about it?
Yeah. So, and our organizations ready to respond, you know, to these things that people have discovered about themselves, their what they love and what they need? And are our organizations going to be very quick to be like, okay, nope, all right, we're good now, everybody back in the office, you know?
But this is what I will say. If anyone here is runs an organization, if anyone who's listening is male, right, running, like, whatever it, if you are not, if this doesn't speak to you, if this is not your life, or that you you're in a position of power, just think about how you are creating systems that force women, or force nearly 3 million women to feel like they had to leave the labor force, right? And yes, there's an individual choice at some point, and then, but there were also some barriers that were put in place.
For sure.
Some of that is in individual action. Some of that is in policy, right? And so what does it look like for you to take that? One of the biggest criticisms I have is that if people are from the position, if you are in a position of power, waiting for someone to ask you to change things still reinforces that you have that power.
Yeah.
So how do, if you're listening, is because you're listening. So now how do you evaluate that when you see the news about nearly 3 million women leaving? You should feel like a sense of ownership of that's your problem. How am I perpetuating this? Has this been a pattern in my work? You know, all those things that we shouldn't wait for the women to decide to leave to serve as feedback, right? We shouldn't wait for women to advocate. We should also be trying to get ahead of it, right?
That's right. And now's the time. Like Blanca said, you're listening. You run an organization. You sit at the table that gets to shape the policies of your workplace. Get ahead of it now and start thinking about how you're going to make space for these women who will be returning to the workforce, hopefully, to not carry the same burdens and loads in the same way that they were when they left, you know, because this has been a major disruption. And how are we going to come back from this in ways that are responsible? We got a letter from a listener. Okay, so for our dear listener question that we have right now. So someone wrote to me and asked this question, and I really didn't have an answer for it. And so I thought maybe Blanca did. And so this question comes from Mary, and she said, she wants to know how to keep a balance with online learning, with teens, and keeping yourself whole and sane. She said that she has two teens at home and who are obviously doing online learning. And she says they are giving her a run for her money, trying to keep them focused with school while she stays focused at work and keeps her sanity. So, Dr. Blanca Ruiz, any thoughts?
I don't have teens, so I don't even know, but I do have two remote learners. So I can only offer that. You have teens, you have tweens, you have a lot of things. So I don't know what you do. But I do think, I would say the hardest thing for me is trying to figure out what do they need to complete and what's the sense of completion. And so So I just, as a parent and as a former teacher, I'm like, well, what do you need? What's the task? What are the tasks that need to get done? And how, like, what's the timeline? Because for me, it's like, if you have a week to get it done, then get it done in a week. I don't care if you all do it all on the front. I'm a frontline person. I don't like waiting till last minute. That doesn't work for me. But maybe your kid does that, right? And then what is it that they have that they are not... That can be taken away. So like when you do, you know, like where are the boundaries, right? So when you do this, then you can access this, right? Then then go ahead and have, you know, I tell my kids all the time, finish this by this time. I don't have to fuss at you. Right. We have no negative energy to invest here. So let's not have this conversation. And obviously it's never perfect and some days are worse than others. But like, just get it done. Right. And there's that. There's also, I've just been watching the Today Show, not a shameless plug, they're not like advertising, but I was watching the Today Show and they've been doing a series on teens and how teens are processing this. And so they're going through this and trying to figure out how to process this. And we're receiving it. Often I have these conversations with my friend Amber, who was here. It's like, we get to see all of the emotions. Children just like leave it on their parents or leave it on their moms, whoever it is, like leave it on us to like deal with. And so maybe part of the resistance, part of the issue is that they are giving you all of their emotions, all of their hormonal emotions at once for you to deal with. And so as hard as it is, because you have your own emotions to tend to, as hard as it is because you have your own work to tend to, what is the process for getting them to unpack that? And like, what's the role that you would have in that? And so I would look it up, but there's just been some great like interviews with teenagers. And so, you know, have you had conversations with your kids, like listening conversations, not telling conversations? Like, teens are not really good for like being told what to do all the time. Shoot, I'm an adult, but
that's really good, Blanca. The listening conversations, right? To right. see what's behind the resistance. You know what I'm saying? Because as parents, we're very good at having those telling conversations. I told you to get up at this time. I want you to do this. You need to do that. But really listening and seeing what is the struggle. Because I have, like you said, I've got some of everything in this house. And my teenage son, who was really struggling with his grades after, I mean, he was a straight A student, never struggled with his grades until this year. And he's learning remotely at home. And then really listening to him talk about what his classes are like. And even what, you know, I'm a teacher's teacher. I love teachers, but not every teacher is like doing a knockout job right now. And so listening to him talk about like what it was like in his PE class. And it's like, mom, he's just putting on a yoga video and we're not even supposed to be doing the yoga. We're just watching them do yoga. Well, no wonder he's not engaged in that. You know what I'm saying? That's not engaging. And so listening to your kids and finding out what's going on in their classes, and maybe you'd see that you'd have a hard time sitting through that as well, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that has been, you know, obviously we have the added benefit of being educators who are able to like suster it out. And so I think it is. I will say, Mary's her name, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I have found myself struggling with being a bigger person these days. So I'm like, what if I don't want to care? What if I don't want to listen? What is doing? Like, I have those moments. And also, you know, like when, if you can sit back and do that, and you know, there are, it doesn't all happen often, but I'm a curse right now. But like, when are those fuck it days? Like, fuck it. You just don't worry about work right now. Let's just worry about us. Let's do this together. And like, they're not frequent and they don't happen every week, but it's sort of the pause on everything to replenish all that has been withdrawn from your body. And so, I don't know. And I say that.
But I also like what you said, Blanca, about putting it on them. You know, like they're teenagers, right? Mm-hmm. So my son got a PS5 for Christmas because his father bought it. I don't believe in buying kids who already have video game systems new video game systems just because it's the it thing. Like, I told y'all how I grew up. So that to me sounds ridiculous. Right. But his father got him a PS5. For Christmas, but did not tell him that he got the PS5 and did not even give it to him until like a week ago because his grades were not what we needed them to be, right? And so like put the responsibility on them. What do they value and what can you kind of put out as a carrot? Be like, listen, if this is what you want, or you want time to do this thing, you want to be able to go to this place, you want to have this thing, then I'm going to need you to show up in this kind of way. And trust me, when it's something that they really value, they get on it. He's on the honor roll. Okay. How about that? This guy's on the honor roll. And now he gets to have his PS5, but it will be taken away if he can't. And it's really, it's not about, oh, you have to be a straight A student. It's about, I just need you to show up in the way that you are, that you are actually capable of showing up and taking this seriously. You know, right. And you have teenagers, so they're definitely old enough to do that. So hope that helps, Mary.
Good luck, Mary. Good luck. Message me if anything worked or if you're still pulling your hair out.
Right. All right, girl. Well, listen, it was really great recapping this year and downloading it. For me personally, I will be walking away really thinking about this idea that you talked about of overworking as a trauma response. And, you know, when taking my sabbatical was certainly that was me surrendering, you know what I'm saying? And being like, I can't, because there was a part of me that saw that as a weakness, you know, that I had to step away, that I couldn't just keep going. It's not my way. I always keep going. I always make it work and make it happen. And so admitting that I needed that time, that was tough, you know? So in some ways I'm proud of myself for being able to do that. But also still need to examine, like, okay, am I overworking? Is that a response to the trauma of needing to feel like this is necessary in order for me to be good enough, you know?
Yeah. And I think the big thing that I'm just thinking about, too, is like abandoning this sense of perfection. It's always something, anybody who's ever I've done workshops on this, but like this whole idea that we were supposed to get this right, and especially during this time, and so, and that perfectionism creeps up in overwork and creeps up in so many spaces that, like, I have a friend who took, I loosely call her friend. I hope she thinks I'm her friend. she's on a sabbatical. She just is like, I'm just taking 6-7 months. I'm not doing it. She also overworked during the pandemic. And so, what does it mean for us to just? I don't know. It's a beautiful time to reinvent things.
Patterns.
And so if we could think of something to look forward to that happened in COVID, maybe, you know, gaining 15 pounds wasn't it, but I was able to find love in, you know, doing this. And so hopefully we find it. And so we're excited for season 2, y'all, and so happy that we are, that y'all are back listening.
Yes. And gonna have some really great interviews diving into a lot of issues. Boy, last year was a doozy. We had Black Lives Matter resurgence, a lot to unpack there. As well. So looking forward to the rest of this season.
Listen back, y'all.
All right. Take care.